Thank you very much, Mr. Wolf, Mr. McGovern, for having this hearing this afternoon. I think without members like you who are so devoted to these issues, I think our communities would be at a real loss. I also wanted to particularly thank you for the letter that you spearheaded in December to the administration, which I think put people a little bit on notice that they needed to answer for some of their policies and practices. I understood my task today to give you a broad brush setting of the current human rights situation inside the country. It's true that some of the abuses in Tibet now, as you've noted, are quite common across China. Those include arbitrary detention and disappearances, torture, the absence of due process, and restrictions on some of the most basic rights, including belief, assembly, expression, and association. I wanted to take a few minutes this afternoon to highlight two or three different problems that we think are either unique to Tibet, relatively unique to Tibet, or particularly acute now. The first of those three includes the expansion of extraordinary surveillance and security measures that have been put in place over the last 18 months. Under that heading, I would include the October 2011 decision to deploy an additional 20,000 cadres to Tibetan villages, both ostensibly for the purpose of better providing social services, but also clearly with an information and intelligence gathering mandate. The January 2012 announcement that government or party officials would be stationed in almost all monasteries permanently, and the February 2013 decision to expand, as Mr. McGovern referred to in his opening remarks, the grid system, which has included the establishment of new police posts with high-tech equipment to monitor daily life and increasingly active volunteer security groups known as red armband patrols. From a human rights perspective, this is essentially the trifecta of state control in Tibetan areas, monasteries, villages, and urban areas. And these are the kinds of tactics you might see government defensively put in place if it were facing a violent insurgency or a massive crime wave. But obviously neither of those conditions prevails in Tibetan areas. We're particularly concerned about the expansion of the security apparatus, which I think should be of concern to the larger security and intelligence community, but also particularly the use of people who are almost by definition, if they are party members, obliged to be partisan in certain ways that make their serving a quasi-policing function entirely inappropriate. So that's one set of issues we're concerned about at the moment. The other is the extreme criminalization of expression, which we've seen particularly with respect to charges of incitement for people who've discussed immolations. I mean, if the behavior that's being criminalized in some of these recent cases actually rises to the level of a prosecutable offense, then we're all guilty too right now. We've seen a number of cases in which people literally did nothing more than talk about immolations for which they were given quite harsh sentences, and there have been roughly a dozen or so of these cases since late 2011. The third problem that I would point to is arguably one of the most widespread instances of forced evictions in modern Chinese history. And here I'm not talking about forced evictions in the sense that people are being dragged out of their homes, but rather that a set of policies is being implemented that, contrary to Chinese government claims, is being put in place without the opportunity for consultation or really an effective way of opting out. Since 2006, the Chinese government's comfortable housing policy has sought to rehouse, either through renovation or reconstruction, a majority of the rural population of the TAR. And at the same time, it's accelerated the relocation and sedentarization policies of nomads in the eastern part of the Tibetan plateau. And by the time these programs are scheduled to wrap up in another year or two, it's estimated that they may affect up to 2 million people. And these are essentially being used as templates for other ethnic minority communities across the country. We have a forthcoming report on this subject, and it's going to show that, among other things, individuals and families are being made to bear the costs of these rehousing policies. They're being indebted as a result, and particularly for people who are being moved effectively in ways away from where they can practice their livelihood, they're struggling to support themselves as a result of policies that are ostensibly designed to improve their standard of living. I think taken together, these abuses show that the energy and the resources the Chinese government is willing to deploy to either stamp out dissent to reshape the Tibetan population that, in a way that makes it easier to surveil and to control. And at the same time, its extraordinary unwillingness to address any of the fundamental underlying grievances. I'm happy to answer questions. I have lots of suggestions for you. I would be delighted to take up the opportunity to give a view of how the administration has done and what should be done differently. At a minimum, I will point out that I think if President Obama is capable of issuing a plea to Israelis to see the world through Palestinian eyes, I think the least he could do this weekend is suggest to President Xi that he try to see the world and that Chinese officials try to see the world through Tibetan eyes. Thanks.